presents the Pick Six Podcast, featuring CBS NFL writers Pete Prisco and Will Brinson, NFL insider Jason LaCanfora, and host Nick Costos. You want NFL talk? We've got NFL talk. From training camp to the Super Bowl and through the NFL draft, our fearsome foursome has you covered. This is the Pick Six Podcast.
Pick Six Podcast, Football Friday. Will Brinson, probably not the best Friday morning. Like, you know, TGIF, I don't know if Dolphins fans right now, thanking God it's Friday, not the best Thursday with this Ryan Tannehill situation, man. This is not good news for Adam Gase and company.
Yeah, Nick, I'm in the office recording this podcast with a 3.5-year-old and a nine-month-old puppy dog. And the puppy dog's actually just chewing on an IFB that I'm supposed to use. I'm just about to cave in and give my son his telephone. And, at some point, it's going to get messy on this podcast. But the important thing is, I'm not even having the worst Friday morning because Dolphins fans are. This is a disaster. And the worst part about it, I think, Nick, is the way that things unfolded on Thursday. In typical Twitter fashion, Ryan Tannehill leaves training camp practice with an injury. The doctors swarm online. You know, he's pronounced dead at like 10:05 a.m.
How great are the Twitter doctors, people chiming in? I'm not a surgeon, but I'm not a doctor, but this is my opinion. Well, thanks for your medical opinion, buddy. No one freaking cares what you have to say. Let's hear what the doctor has to say.
I don't care if you're like a 40-year veteran of sports writing or a 7-year-old kid in Akron, Ohio. Nobody cares about your opinion of grainy video and what it looks like for Ryan Tannehill's knee. However, that's not going to stop me from opining on it.
Go ahead.
Now, in the moment, I'm going to act like I'm a doctor too. Now, in the moment, of course, what happened was immediately in 2017, in August, the year of our Lord 2017, heading into the season, if you go down with an injury and you're a quarterback, the Colin Kaepernick heat comes with great alacrity. We have just surrendered to the telephone. Robbie has the telephone. I can confirm Robbie has the telephone.
But I have a very important question here before we swing back to the Tannehill stuff. So you said I'm going to give Robbie, your 3-year-old son, his telephone. So yes. Robbie has a telephone specifically for him, which I'm guessing is just something you give him so he plays with it and stops being a nuisance or quiets down. Or is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much stop being a nuisance. Like, I would love to be playing with him right now, but I have to do this podcast, and I got to write some stuff, and it's
just... work.
This is A-plus working, D-plus parenting. I'm giving him the telephone at 9:30 in the morning. Yeah, I mean, it's got, like, Diz Jr. on it. It's hooked up to the Wi-Fi. He can't call anybody, but he can, like, access these apps, and he'll be happy for 45 minutes while we do this podcast.
God bless. You know, Robbie having a better Friday than Ryan Tannehill at this point.
Exactly. And so anyway, the Colin Kaepernick heat gets going right away as soon as a quarterback gets injured.
Even before he goes down, Will, I feel like he starts rolling out and already they're like, Kaepernick.
Whoa, is that a guy with a brace on his knee? Kaepernick! Yeah, so the Kaepernick heat starts going up. And at that point, it's like, wait a minute. You know what's going to be really awkward is that Jay Cutler makes more sense for the Dolphins and Colin Kaepernick because...
Not even close!
Well, not only did Kaepernick go down to Miami and play last year while wearing a Fidel Castro shirt, which doesn't sit well with people of Cuban descent, many of you live in Miami, but Jay Cutler, who was in a 3-man booth for Fox Sports, hadn't filed retirement paperwork, played for Adam Gase in 2015 and had his best year with the Chicago Bears. People were talking about him finally emerging as this quarterback for the Bears in 2015. He was really efficient, didn't make many mistakes, completed 64.5% of his passes, 7.6 yards per attempt. Jay Cutler was good.
He was good.
And it got Adam Gase a head coaching job. So I think if Ryan Tannehill, and then what happens is we go through the Kaepernick stuff, we go through the Cutler stuff on Thursday, and then, of course, naturally, it gets reported that nothing is wrong with Ryan Tannehill. His knee is the same it was. Then on Thursday night...
It's incredible. This was all in the span of a couple hours here, right?
Six hours. Adam Schefter reports that Ryan Tannehill, not fine, may need season-ending surgery. As it turns out, when Tannehill hurt his knee in Week 14 against the Cardinals last year, there was a partial tear of the ACL. And they did the same thing that Andrew Luck's team did with his shoulder.
Oh, and that worked out really well, right? Like, that's what you want to follow, because Andrew Luck has barely thrown a football since January, and he hurt his shoulder 2 years ago. I mean, that's what you want to do. Follow the Andrew Luck recovery plan.
But it's like, all right, we'll just rest and rehab this partially torn ACL and maybe he'll make it through 2017 with no further problems.
Or he won't. Or he'll get hurt non-contact in training camp in the first week and a half.
Or he'll be wearing a brace and he'll suffer another knee injury. I mean, this is an obvious conclusion. I'm not sure why we all weren't onto it more to begin with, yeah. But now it looks like Tannehill might be out for the year already before the season has started. Matt Moore, capable backup, but they're going to have to sign somebody else.
Yeah. By the way, my favorite thing about that extended rant you just went on was, it's like at this point, it's like anyone gets hurt, like offensive lineman goes down second string, Kaepernick, get him in. Like kick returner goes down, bring in Kaepernick. We need Kaepernick on the team. That certainly happens here. Let's spin this forward. If Tannehill's not there this year, look, I mean, Miami, I think we can agree, was sort of like an overachieving 10-16 last year. Got their doors blown off by the Steelers in the wild card round. Without Tannehill, if it's Matt Moore, even if it's Cutler, I don't know if I want to give this team much of a chance to contend for a playoff berth in the AFC at this point.
I mean, Tannehill was pretty good last year. I think it's a little bit underrated how well he played in that first year with Adam Gase. Gase liked him enough where the Dolphins didn't pursue Cutler this offseason, because they totally could have, right?
100%. Cutler, I feel like, would die to play for Gase in Miami.
Of course. But Gase liked, and he said that. He said this just straight out, that the Dolphins media asked him, why have you thought about going after Cutler? Maybe Chicago media did. He said, no, look, I really like what we've got going with our quarterback situation. We're going to stick with Tannehill. And, I mean, Tannehill played pretty well. He looked like a guy who might finally be developing. So this stinks from that perspective. I like Tannehill. I think he's a good athlete. He's had some moments. He's just never really put it all together.
Well, can I hit you with one of those moments to your point? Like, the one thing we had never seen from Tannehill, really, was late-game heroics. And I think it was the game in L.A. against the Rams, the one that I think this game ultimately got Jeff Fisher fired, settling for a Zuerlein field goal. He misses it. Anyway, they scored 10 points. I think they won the game 10-9, but he leads them down the field on a final drive. I remember because I had money on the Rams in that game, and I lost. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that was a brutal game.
But Tannehill was great in the fourth. And I remember watching that and thinking, like, he finally turned the corner, because it's like every year it's like this is the year. No, this is the year that Tannehill's going to turn it around and get it going. He did kind of get it going last year, so feel bad for the young man here. And like I said, I think, you know, unless they bring Cutler out of retirement, which would be absolutely freaking hilarious, like Cutler throwing picks as a member of the Miami Dolphins would be great.
No. The better part about Cutler coming out of retirement is the butt clenching that's going to go on among Kaepernick supporters when Cutler gets signed. For Kaepernick, it's like, oh my God! Of course, it's a conspiracy. No, it's not a conspiracy. Cutler makes more sense from a football perspective. If he's signed by the Dolphins, don't freak out. And by the way, that Rams game, now that you're talking about it, makes me so mad, because I forgot that I think the Rams were 3-point dogs, or like 1.5 point.
Two and a half point dogs.
1.5 point dogs at home, and you're up 10-0 in the fourth quarter with 4 minutes to go. You should win that game.
And that's what it was. It was 14-10. It wasn't 10-9, because they covered the Dolphins obviously covered the spread.
Ended up covering, right. But if you're the Rams, not only should you win that game, you should really, 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 really cover that game. And they didn't. And if we'd been in that situation and you're like, your bookie had come to you and said, listen, you can quadruple this bet. Whatever it is, $25, $50, $100.
Yeah, it was a good amount of money I had on the Rams in that spot. Good amount, nice amount.
Well, I'm saying, if he said you can quadruple it when it was 10-0 and they're up and with 4 minutes left, and if you lose, you die, you would be like, quadruple it. That's free money. And then you would have just watched him walk in with a pistol and put you to bed.
Yeah, because this was like Tannehill was like Lazarus. Like, he rose from the dead. It was unbelievable what happened at the end of that game. Like, the game was over, and then all of a sudden it was not. But I mean, if it's not going to be Tannehill this year for the Dolphins, I think that the concern is obviously huge here. And I think we've gotten to the point now where, like, anyone goes down on any team in training camp, and what do you hear, Will? Kaepernick! Bring us Colin Kaepernick! So
yeah, the over-under on number of complaints about Colin Kaepernick is roughly 40,000. I would take the over. I also would have taken the over last night during the Hall of Fame game on Jerry Jones. Questions asked to Jerry Jones about Ezekiel Elliott. I thought Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth did a pretty good job pressing him on it. And it was interesting because Jerry Jones' comment was basically, he said the domestic violence is not an issue. Zeke has had some other things that have been looked at. And reading between the lines, translating that from Texan, I take it to mean Jerry has seen the evidence.
Yep.
He believes that Zeke is going to be cleared on domestic violence. But because of all the other mitigating factors and the circumstances surrounding Elliott this season, he's going to get dinged. It's going to end up being one game or two games. He hopes he'll be there for week one.
He'll be suspended for that game, you'd think, at this point, right? Because the owners are going to come out with pitchforks demanding it.
Yeah, I mean, it's favorable treatment to the Cowboys if you don't give him one game. Although I wouldn't be surprised if they went two games to start. He appeals, it bumped into one game, and then everybody's like, all right, whatever. It's one game. It's a divisional game against the Giants. It's a big deal. I think if you're the Cowboys, you're feeling pretty good about one game too, honestly.
Did Jerry Jones hit us with the Seinfeld yada 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 with the other things? Like, it's not domestic violence, but he's had some, you know, other things, yada yada yada. Like Ezekiel Elliott walks into a bar on a Saturday night, yada yada yada. He's meeting with the commissioner on Monday morning in New York.
He yada yada like pulling a girl's top down, a speeding ticket, a medical marijuana dispensary visit, and like a late night bar incident that Zeke may or may not have, you know, punched a guy, allegedly, reportedly, whatever it is.
Hashtag other things.
Yeah, right. Slash other things. Slash whatever it is. All right. So in that game, did you watch it?
Of course I watched it. And look, the game sucks. The Hall of Fame game's terrible. But you know what it is? Football. And it's just something comforting. Like, it honestly, like, it sounds hyperbolic and sounds like I'm putting on, I'm being sincere. It really does soothe my soul to sit on the couch and hear football being back, watch football being back. So I loved it, even though the game was atrocious.
All right, confession. We'll find out how much our bosses listen to this podcast. I'm going to confess right now that I didn't watch the first quarter, maybe the first half of the game.
That means the first half.
First half, right. Yeah, I cut it on at halftime as they were like, all right, they were doing the Jerry Jones interview because I was tweeting that. I didn't watch the first quarter, first half because my wife wanted to rewatch episode three of Game of Thrones, the latest one that came out that we discussed on Wednesday. And I succumbed to the pressure because I know she's about to get Cersei with the level of football thrown at her face. So I decided to I decided to acquiesce to her demands to watch the Game of Thrones.
You're the big winner. Yeah, you watched one of the best episodes of TV I've ever seen, which was episode 3 of Game of Thrones this past week, over Blaine Gabbert and Kellen Moore. You won, Will Brinson. You were the big winner.
When I actually was doing a radio interview with Bill Ryder while my wife was watching the beginning of it, and I told Adam Kluger's producer, I was like, don't ask me anything about this game, all right? But, you know, we talked about other stuff. There's plenty of stuff to talk about, including Kaepernick! But there are a lot of takeaways from that game.
Give me Colin Kaepernick! I want Kaepernick!
Blaine Gabbert shut down a little Colin Kaepernick talk. He looked pretty good, right?
Well, I think, like, you talk about pitchforks. Imagine Gabbert throws a couple picks in this game. Why did Chip Kelly start Kaepernick? Why didn't he start Kaepernick? Gabbert did look good, and I think this is what shows you here. Gabbert's not a starter in the NFL. He's proven that time and time again, but definitely a capable backup. I thought he looked pretty good. So you could do worse than that Cardinals quarterback room with Carson Palmer, Drew Stanton, and Blaine Gabbert. But the guy on the Cardinals that really interested me, Will, more so from a fantasy perspective than anything else, Kerwin Williams, he looked great. I think he's probably the number two, the handcuff to David Johnson.
Yeah, Kerwin Williams. And then the other Williams, too, the Chad Williams, the receiver. They both, too, I think Kerwin Williams is a rookie, right? Late round?
No, Kerwin's been there a couple years, I think.
Second year guy? Okay, I'm an idiot. You can tell I really paid attention to that that game. Chad Williams is a rookie, though, and he looked good catching balls. And I thought Kerwin Williams on that touchdown, yeah, you're right, he's not a rookie. What am I talking about? 2014. Good Lord. He should have gotten more pub before then. I'm thinking TJ Logan as a rookie also looked good as a running back, left injured late. Kerwin Williams, though, had a touchdown. To me, I think you're right. Chris Johnson will be the guy that gets the sort of the attention because he's the bigger name. He's got the long history. He's backing up David Johnson. I think Kerwin Williams is the guy you want to own as a late round sleeper in terms of the Cardinals running backs. And then I think Chad Williams, especially, you know, with sort of how this receiving core looks, I mean, Larry Fitzgerald is great, but he's older. He's drafted in 2004. This might be his last season. John Brown struggled with injuries last year. J.J. Nelson, also like John Brown, kind of a deep threat. Chad Williams could be the guy who emerges as maybe the possession receiver opposite Larry Fitzgerald in this, in what could be a high-octane attack. And I'm very impressed with the Williamses in terms of their production for the Cardinals on.
And by the way, if you're on the Cardinals offense, your last name is probably either Williams, Brown, or Johnson. It's one of those three.
Really amazing, right?
It is kind of amazing here. But you know who they don't have? A guy named Taco. That's on the Dallas Cowboys. That was a nice professional segue there. They need Taco, Will. I love tacos, by the way. I need tacos, too. The Cowboys need Taco Charlton to put some pressure on the opposing quarterback this year. And you don't want to overreact to the Hall of Fame game, but Taco Charlton, zero pressures in 23 snaps against second and third teamers. Not good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing. And, again, you're right. You don't need to overreact. but you can a little, you can overreact a little bit. You know, the Cowboys, Taco Charlton makes a lot of sense in terms of a guy who is going to fit in and play well for this team. But I think, you know, I think it was PFF, you know, had the point that he just didn't get any pressure whatsoever on the quarterback. He has to get pressure in the regular season. They have to. They just didn't. He didn't record a tackle. He didn't record a tackle. Like he,
in the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's his only action as a pro. And, I mean, look, he's a rookie. It's going to take a little bit of time. I trust Rod Marinelli to bring him along. But if he doesn't make an impact as a rookie and at least have, seven sacks. If he didn't have seven sacks, then the Cowboys' defensive line is going to struggle this year. At least they got Rico Gathers, though, so that's good.
I loved betting on Baylor when Rico Gathers was playing college basketball there because he was such a stud in the post, a double-double machine. That was a pretty nice touchdown grab he had from Kellen Moore. I don't know if he's on the radar for fantasy or for the regular season, but, I mean, Jason Witten's about 108 years old at this point. It's not outside the realm of possibility that Rico Gathers could make an impact at some point this year for Dallas.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, he's sort of the guy. I remember it was a late-round pick, sixth round in 2016. Jeff Swaim is the other guy on that depth chart. Jason Witten is consistent. He's going to play, but Witten's not that explosive pass catcher that they've been trying to. You know, Witten, he's just older. I mean, he's just not.
They wanted Gavin Escobar to be that guy, and he never turned into it. So now Gathers has that opportunity.
And so maybe Gathers would be that guy. I mean, if you're again a late round flyer on a potential tight end and a high octane offense, you could do worse. And plus, he's a basketball player. We know, Nick, that basketball players always turn in to good football players. Buda Baker, Hassan Reddick also looked fantastic. Speaking of Cardinals rookies, these guys are actually rookies who looked good for the Arizona Cardinals on defense. Baker moving all over the place. Poor man's Tyrann Mathieu. And Hassan Reddick, Pete Prisco has pointed out repeatedly since being out in Cardinals camp that he thinks Hassan Reddick is a guy who could make plays. And I think Reddick, it's interesting, because of all the trades up in that draft, the Cardinals ended up having to take, and I'm doing air quotes here, having to take Hassan Reddick in the first round. It may benefit them in this sort of all-in year as they try to make a push with Carson Palmer, Larry Fitzgerald, Bruce Arians at the end of things. I think Reddick and Baker are pro-ready guys who can be moved around in that defensive system and make an impact.
I loved watching Buda Baker last year at Washington. The Husky secondary as a whole was great last year. We saw a number of players drafted from it. And I like your approximation of Baker as like a Tyrann Mathieu guy. I see that in him. And Prisco's been raving about Reddick. So both of those guys look pretty good. Both of those guys will in their early 20s. Let's celebrate an NFL player, Will, who now has a 4 as the first digit in his age. That would be the GOAT, Thomas Edward Patrick Brady, turned 40 years old on Thursday, my friend.
I got to give you credit. That is a superb segue because I started – I knew where we were going there.
Yeah, of course.
I started in the young guys, and I wasn't sure where I was going to go. Tom Brady, 40 years old. Let's start here first. Training camp practice on Thursday. The Patriots have 5 GOATs because of 5 rings and because he's the GOAT, and a giant G-O-A-T letters. Don't stand on the letters. You can pet the GOATs. And they got avocado cupcakes brought into the media and handed out for Brady for his 40th birthday. What would you, Nick Costos, want for your 40th birthday?
You know, I'm very pleased with my career path. I have no complaints professionally. A lot of gratitude for how things have shaken out and hopefully will continue to shake out here. So, like, I make a nice amount of money. I'm not rich, but I'm not living paycheck to paycheck. So I'm feeling good right now about the way things are. The only thing that's missing for me in my life right now, bud, I want an Instagram model. Is that too much to ask for? Because Instagram is honestly the devil. And it's different for you because you're married. But, like, I sit on Instagram and I scroll through it and it's like, okay, sports update. One of my college friends, pictures of his baby. And then hot chick, Instagram model. And it just drives me insane on a daily basis. Now, I'm not going to mention any names. But if Emily Sears, for instance, wanted to be my 40th birthday present in 6 years from now, I would not be opposed to it. Give me an Instagram model, Will Brinson.
For me, I'll tell you what I want, Nick. I want some sort of golf, and this is unlimited funds, unlimited time. I can go, you know, we're going to make it happen. What I want is a golf trip, and my wife has since gotten home and is taking care of our son now, I believe. Either that or there's a stranger in the kitchen playing with my
son. There's a stranger in your house.
Stranger in the kitchen. I'll tell you what, she hadn't come and gotten this dog yet, that's for sure. But I want a golf trip with my wife and I and a couple other couples, good friends. Maybe go to Scotland. Maybe go out west.
St. Andrews?
St. Andrews, hit some of these great spots and hang out in Europe and play a bunch of golf. I'm talking like 3 weeks and playing not a round a day, but at least a round every other day. You get to really, you know, plan it out ahead of time, test these incredible, links courses and just have a blast and not worry about work for 3 weeks, not worry about anything. My folks will take care of the kid. It'll be a blast. I actually think we could make this happen, but I probably need to start planning it now. And clearly I'm not going to do that because I can barely manage my own life at the moment. Plus, I'm worried about a book. I got to write a book. You know, everybody's got to write a book. Tom Brady wrote a book.
Great segue, buddy. Like, that was good. That was some good stuff there by you.
I'm not writing a book, though. I would like to write a book. Brady did write one called, it's basically referred to as the Athlete's Bible. You can check it out. We've got a, I was like, oh, do you have the Brady book?
No, what happened is I opened up the CBSSports.com page that had Tom about the book, and then, yeah, of course, the autoplay video started. So, yeah, but so that was that.
We just made money.
We made money for the company, so that was good.
That's good. Yeah, the Brady book is out, and you can check it out on CBSSports.com. Break it down. It's a nutrition manual. It's a life manual about how to treat yourself as an athlete, how to be better as an athlete, and you can buy it on Amazon. It was a bestseller within like 12 hours of being online, and we're going to play a game as it relates to the Tom Brady book, Nick.
Yes, I love games.
We are going to play a game called Is This a Tom Brady Food?
You know, because he's on the vegan plant-based diet right now, which is actually starting to gain a lot of traction here. I'm not going to lie to you. I actually considered for a moment becoming a vegan and doing the plant-based diet. And then I think I saw a piece of steak and I was like, well, screw that. You know, I'm going to die anyway, so I might as well enjoy it before I go.
So I'm going to give you like five foods, right? And you're going to tell me if these are included in the Tom Brady cookbook, which I may or may not have a copy of.
Okay.
In front of me. We're going to start here. We'll do a couple. We'll see how this goes.
Okay.
If it's fun, we'll do more.
And if it's not, we'll cut it off. We'll see.
First up, sweet potato gnocchi with escarole.
Oh, that's real. That has to be real.
A Tom Brady reel or not?
Tom Brady book reel.
Boom, you got it.
That of course. I mean, and actually, that sounds delicious, sweet potato gnocchi with escarole.
That sounds like something you get out of Blue Apron. Ahem. Come back to us, Blue Apron. Next up, tilapia coated in toasted almonds with haricot verts and a lemon meringue sauce.
I think that is a Blue Apron meal, not a Tom Brady meal, because I think that you've given that meal before as like a Blue Apron read, so that is not a Tom Brady meal. That's a Blue Apron meal.
I actually just made that one up myself. You're right.
It was really good.
Thank you. I think the fact that it was like tilapia with toasted almonds is what threw me off.
No, because you read it like you were reading it off like the menu. And sir, in the specials today, we have the tilapia with crusted almonds and haricot verts.
Okay. Next up, Cajun mackerel with lemon caper sauce.
Not a chance that Cajun mackerel is part of the Tom Brady cookbook.
It is a Tom Brady item.
Damn it.
Unbelievable.
I thought I would bet 1,000. That sucks.
I did too. Cajun mackerel, lemon caper sauce also sounds fantastic. I'm getting starving. Next up, chicken and vegetable soup.
I mean, it could very easily. I'm gonna. No, it's not in the book because he's a plant-based diet, right?
It's in the book.
So he does eat chicken. So he's not a vegan.
I need to look it up. Yeah, I think it's actually. I think it's actually included. It is. You know what? I don't think there's any actual chicken. Just chicken broth.
Oh, so it's vegetable soup with chicken broth.
Yeah, it's vegetable soup that tastes like flavored chicken. Next up, country.
No.
Meat.
No. No.
Pie.
No. Obviously not. That's like something you'd find on the menu at Cracker Barrel under the "We'll kill you if you eat too much of it."
This is actually in the Brady diet.
There's no way that the country meat pie is in the Tom Brady diet.
It's a baked crust and filled pie using almond flour, eggs, and coconut oil. So that's how you do your crust.
Okay.
And there's an actual chicken filling. There is 2 cups of pulled chicken. If desired, use instructions from Taco Night recipe for fall season. Incredible.
I might have to get the Tom Brady cookbook. Because, like, the guys in, like, I have a sprained shoulder. By the way, I told you about this yesterday. I have a sprained shoulder diagnosis. I'm sitting last night on my couch with a heating pad on my back. I felt like I was 65 years old. Like Tom Brady at age 40 is in much better shape than I am at 34. Like, I might have to go on the Tom Brady diet, but like the Rob Gronkowski version of the Brady diet where like I can't cut out booze. I still need to drink every once in a while.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the way you need to live your life. All right, next up, local venison with creamed Swiss chard.
local venison. Okay, so what does that mean, local venison? That means, if I eat it, the venison's from South Florida, how local is the venison? I don't see any deer running around, Miami here or Fort Lauderdale. I'm going to say that this is not a part of the Tom Brady cookbook.
It is a part of the Tom Brady cookbook. Unbelievable. You started out 2-for-2 and then went 0-for-4 to close out. But you know what?
This is why I'm in bad shape.
Well, in fairness, I think the first one was a pretty I picked some tough ones on purpose. I purposely set you up with that no, and then went 4 straight yeses that couldn't possibly be involved because they featured so much meat. I still think you did a great job. Tom Brady did a great job with his book too. You can check out the Tom Brady book. It was featured on, I think, CBS News, right?
Yep.
And they did a whole piece in the morning. It was fantastic.
And again, and it hits bookshelves, coming up this September. So be sure to check that out, the Tom Brady cookbook.
It's the TB12 method. You can check it out on Amazon and pre-order it there. And you can get recipes for all this stuff. More importantly, you can get that little young athlete in your life a good head start on becoming the next Tom Brady. I bet you anything, Nick Kostos, that were he in elementary school or high school right now, that Matthew Stafford would be interested in reading this book. What do you think?
I think that Matthew Stafford, given how great he was in high school in Texas and then college at Georgia, he was clearly a motivated young man. So I think Matthew Stafford would have loved to read the Tom Brady book. And you know what else Matthew Stafford loves? Sitting down with CBS Sports NFL insider Jason LaCanfora. We're going to play that interview right now, and then we're going to talk to JLC on the other side.
Yeah, you know, every year is different, but we have something to build off of from last year, and, you know, like to be ahead in those games in the fourth quarter this year would be a whole lot more fun. But take wins any way you can get them in this league. But honestly, you know, every year is such a new year. We got new players on our team. So does everybody in our division. So you got to go out there and, you know, improve yourself again.
Really think it would be more fun not to do that?
You
get pretty into it. I mean,
no,
you're
I'd love
it.
I'd love it, but maybe a little less stressful. We'll put it that way. Maybe for friends and family. My wife and parents are freaking out at home, but I'm having fun doing it.
Are there things that you think you guys can do to sort of ensure that? I mean, games kind of take on a life of their own. I mean, are there certain tenets that you guys think about in the offseason? Like, if we do X, Y, and Z, maybe we won't have to win the fourth quarter?
No, you know, I think the majority of, you look at the majority of NFL games, man, they're one possession games, right? They're within 7-10 points. Everybody's got a chance to win every week. And, you know, hopefully you make more plays earlier on in the game that maybe give you a little bit of a lead and a chance to run the ball out at the end of the game and win it. So it really goes into total team ball, playing better as a team.
Is there a level of excitement about the run game this year and maybe being able to be a little more balanced and complimented?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think obviously we had a good start to it last year and then some injuries really hurt us. You know, you can never predict those or you understand when they happen. But if we can stay healthy, I think we got a chance of being better on the ground.
I don't know if you guys hear it here because you're in training camp or in a cocoon, but nationally there is a little bit of a buzz about the Lions. And, you know, hey, you know, sometimes there's teams that take leaps and all of a sudden go from fighting to make the playoffs to contending for a Lombardi. Do you guys hear any of that? Prognosticators, certain people saying, hey, the Lions are my sleeper Super Bowl pick?
No, we're out here battling, man. We're out here battling every day. There are guys on this team, you know, fighting tooth and nail to earn roster spots, and we're doing everything we can to be as good a team as we can possibly be. Like I said, I've been in this league long enough to know that every year is different. You got to prove yourself. I've been on a playoff team in 2011 and a team that, you know, wasn't very good in 2012, and you know, I've had that up and down. So I'm just looking to continue, you know, trying to keep making the playoffs every year and build on that.
How frustrating was it, though, to know that? I mean, I know at the time I'm writing columns saying, hey, if I had to give the MVP award out right now, Matt Stafford's in my top three. And then, you know what I mean, have to play through what you played through and not be able to be yourself at times.
Yeah, it was tough. Obviously, you know, injuries happen in this league, and you know, whether or not you can play through them is really – you know, up to luck, you know, and I was able to play through it, but, you know, definitely wasn't 100%. I was doing everything I could to try and help our team win. Felt like I gave us still the best chance to win and was fighting tooth and nail out there. But, you know, hopefully go through a season, you know, as healthy as I can possibly be, and we'll see what happens.
In terms of your actual game, I mean, to me, you're playing at a level like not a lot of guys play at, but are there a couple things in the back of your head where, hey, I still want to keep working on this, I still want to keep working on that?
Yeah, you know, I think I kind of went back and looked at some of the tape from last year, and there are things just here and there, maybe it's one, maybe two completions a game that, you know, then put your team in an even better spot and put you in a better spot. You know, I think I can find those and get it to guys even that much better.
I know it's just practice, but you and Golden, you got a, there's a little something there. There's a lot to me. It seems like that is just unsaid, where you just feel each other.
Yeah, you know, Golden's a gamer, man. He's a guy that loves competition. You know, I feel like you come out here one day, it's me and Golden. You come out here the next day, it's me and Marvin. You come out here the day after that, it's me and Theo. And you come out there the next day, it's Brandon Fells. 2 days ago, I had a hell of a day. So you never know. This offense, you know, the ball gets spread around. And GT was in some spots today where ball just kind of found him. He made some plays. So it was a lot of fun.
And how about the relationship with your offensive coordinator? Because it seems like you guys have been simpatico since the giddy up.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, Jim Bob's a really smart guy, young guy that, you know, sees the game of football and understands it very similar to the way I do. You know, gives me a lot of freedom. We bounce, you know, ideas off each other all the time, and it's just a good relationship.
Can't let you go without asking the $25 million question. I'm guessing you're not really worried about the contract. And
listen, I hire an agent for a reason, you know, so he can deal with that. And honestly, when I'm in here, I don't ever talk about it. I don't ever get asked about it, except from the media.
Right.
So, you know, all the guys on our team, we got one goal, man. That's to go out there and be as good as we can possibly be.
Hey, I appreciate your time, as always, man.
Thank you.
Have a great season. Yeah. Thank you, Matt.
Jason, before we get caught up on what's been going on your training camp tour, Will and I talked on the Wednesday edition of the show. We saw that Jamal Adams quote, "I'd love to die on a football field." We don't want to die on a football field. We talked about that Wednesday, how we would like to die. How would Jason Lockhand Fora like to die if he could write the script?
Man, I'll settle for anything not incredibly painful. if it was over the age of, like, I don't want to get too greedy. I mean, if it was over the age of 80, I think you're at least, you know, like somebody dies in their 80s and they were a good person, it's obviously sad. And if you love them, it's obviously heartbreaking. But, you know, that's a, you know, 80% of a century, that's a fairly decent run. I mean, you know what I mean? Like if you're talking to me at age 20, 30, or 40 and tell me, what are you going to sign? Would you sign up for 80? I think you have to say, yeah, right?
Yes.
I mean, it beats 79 different alternatives, right?
I would probably. I'm not saying I would sign for 70, 75, but I mean, like, if you guaranteed me that I'm going to pull out 40 more years, which is double what I've had so far, I would probably be, I'd at least consider inking that doc.
Well, it's like life is such a crapshoot, right? Like, I see, like elderly people, I'm 34, like, you know, more the thought of mortality creeps in a little bit as you get a little older, right? I see people, like, in their 80s, and I, like, want to, like, say, like, congratulations. Like, how'd you make it so far? Like, it's such a crapshoot. Like, I would love to live to be 80 years old. Like tomorrow's not guaranteed.
I see some people in their 80s who look better than people in their 60s. I mean, you just never know. I mean, I'm sure some of it's living right, some of it's genetics, some of it's just plain dumb luck. But yeah, I mean, I'm 43. Who knows? Like, again, even 70, you give me 70 right now, I'll think about it.
If you guaranteed me, I can work in my current job just as long as I want, like covering football for as long as I want to cover football, and then that I could spend a decade in retirement hanging out and enjoying my family, I'd probably sign for that.
For 70.
I'm picturing you in loafers in a golf cart, and you croak on, like, the 15th green or something like that. At age, like, 78. I think you'd be all right with that, Brinson.
You actually nailed sort of what I was going for yesterday. Last podcast, you nailed that.
I can't believe I'm the only one that came out with the, like in a bed, peacefully surrounded by the people I love. Like, Brinson's on the golf cart, JLC's like, just sign me up for 70, I'll take it, whatever happens here. Like, you want to be surrounded by your loved ones, right?
I said if I could get it peacefully, not painful, I mean, I'm a, you know, and over the, again, originally I think I asked for 80, like, I'm assuming at that point there's people around me, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be buying my own private island and, like, you know, doing the Howard Hughes thing. I mean, I'm sure I'll be in Baltimore.
How about JLC,
like,
by the way?
To be able to see your grandkids grow up, I don't know that you could ask for really more than that. You know what I mean? Like, you live long enough that your grandchildren are adults, and maybe you get a great-grandkid or two. Like, I mean, that's it. Like, that, I would take that in a split second.
Well, how about JLC negotiating with himself on the age? Like, I'll 80, and then he went down to 70 without even a negotiation.
Yeah, by the end of this podcast, JLC's like, listen, just give me
15. If I can get do my next contract to get one of these kids to high school. You can shoot me in the head the next day.
Let me get, yeah, I will. I want to feel like, I'll tell you what I would feel cool with. I'll feel at ease once I know that Robbie and or any other, you know, future progeny, not on the way right now, but, you know, everybody is sufficiently on their own and not a screw up. Okay, that's all I want. It's like, as long as I set my kids up well and they sort of got their own kids. Like my grandfather, he had I think, seven grandkids. And I was the only one he got to see get married. But he was like, listen, he actually told me this. He told me this the Thanksgiving before I proposed to my wife. He goes, don't come down to Florida for Thanksgiving unless you're engaged. And I was like, are you kidding? He's like, no. He's like, look, I'm not coming up. He's like probably 75 at the time. He's like, I'm not coming to North Carolina again unless it's for your wedding. And I'm not going down without seeing one of my grandkids get married. And I was the only one he got to see. So he's actually ahead of the curve.
Dang, he kind of threw the gauntlet down there.
Yeah, he did. He liked my wife at the time. He liked her at the time anyway. So it was kind of cool of him.
Right. All right. Cool beans.
All right, Chase.
All right, guys. Well, I'm out. I'm gonna go. Try not to get hit by a car. See ya.
So Jay, we just heard your interview with Matthew Stafford. We got to talk about that interview before we let you go. At least here.
No, I'm kidding. I'm being facetious.
What were your impressions of Stafford when you sat down with him?
I like Matt a lot. I've always liked him. I've enjoyed talking to him. I love the way he plays. I mean, it's funny that, you know, he's the first thing out of his mouth is like, I don't think we can have as many fourth quarter comebacks. And I'm just like, dude, that's your DNA. Like, who are you kidding? You absolutely jump out of your skin. You're never more alive on a football field than when you're doing that stuff. And we talked about it, you know, not everything. We talked for a while before I turned the little microphone on there. And that's just, I mean, I don't know that that's ever going to change. And, you know, I mean, will they have as many situations like that in the fourth quarter this year? I mean, just sort of the odds, right? Like, logic would say no, but he's going to have to probably pull some games out. Sometimes you parachute in and you feel skewed because you catch a team on a particularly good day and it might color a little bit of what your original impressions are. I think they could be a little bit more of a complete team, but not catch as many breaks, you know, and still end up with a similar record. And I don't know that that record gets you in the NFC this year, you know, depending on what happens in the NFC East, where I think, you know, there's three teams that have at least a shot at the playoffs. And then what happens in the NFC South, where I don't necessarily know what to make of that division, but I think it'll be pretty decent. So I think they have to run the ball better, right? Like, that just by default. I mean, you look at the upgrades to the offensive line, and yeah, they've had some injuries, but if they can withhold, you know, any more major losses, I think they'll be a little more balanced. I certainly think the right side of the line seems pretty plug and play. And I feel like the secondary, almost by default, has got to be a little better too. And the key to it all is Ziggy Ansah. I mean, they're downplaying him being on pop. They're talking like it's just super, super precaution. But that dude was never close to himself last year. And I have a hard time seeing that being a playoff team without him being in the top five in sacks.
Yeah, that's a good point. If he's not – I mean, that team, they were so crazy lucky in 2016. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a team that got that lucky. They trailed in, I think, with like 9 of their first 10 games and won 7 of them. They trailed in the fourth.
Right.
I think you're right about that running game and the pass rush, because first of all, on the pass rush, if Ziggy Ansah isn't there and they're not getting after the passer, Jerod Davis might lead the league in tackles, and that might not be that might not be a good thing.
No, it probably wouldn't. I can tell you they're real high on Akeem Spence and feel like he's going to be a really good fit for them. You know, they think their front seven is improved, and you know, I think Davis will look. He's got a high motor. He's, to your point, he's going to make a lot of tackles. He's going to be around the ball, and we'll see if it translates into big plays, if it translates into forced fumbles and interceptions, and what he's able to do in coverage. But certainly, they needed to continue to add speed and athleticism to that defense, and they certainly did that in the draft.
What about Amir Abdullah? Because I feel like people are sleeping on him, just assuming he's going to get injured. I mean, this is a guy who
that's the thing.
Fumble prone,
yep.
Obviously injured in the NFL. But if he plays 16 games, this is a totally different offense.
Yeah, I guess the thing with him is, what is the workload? You know what I mean? And will any sort of anything close to a feature back workload just given how he's built and the injury history, will that just lead to more, you know, more of a revolving door there in the backfield because he's not, you know, able to hold up and he's not durable? And, you know, is he C.J. Spiller? You know, I don't know. I mean, is that how the career comes out looking more like, where you wonder what could have been, but injuries and limitations end up sapping him of making that explosive stuff just not really worth the gamble anymore. And yeah, you're hoping for that one big play where he breaks one, but how long do you have to wait? And is he on IR? So, you know, I don't know, man. I no one has a crystal ball on that one. I know that Jim Bob Cooter is going to try to keep them more balanced. But the thing about him is, you know, at the end of the day, if they're not running the ball, they're still going to sling it around. Like, I still believe in that passing game, even if nobody's in the box. The thing is, can they get after the other team's quarterback, and can they make plays on the ball as a secondary themselves?
So a note before the question, worth noting, JLC, that when you said Jim Bob Cooter, I can see Will, because we're on video on Skype, both of us looked at each other and laughed at the same time because we're sophomoric idiots here, and we think Jim Bob Cooter.
Well, there was no way I wasn't going to say Jim Bob Cooter if we're talking about the Lions, so I mean, let's just keep it real.
I'm sort of irate that it took us 6 podcasts to get Jim Bob Cooter's name mentioned.
If you notice the injury, the interview, I just went with your coordinator because I didn't want to say the name to Matt and then start giggling like myself. You know what I mean? So if you go back and listen, I'm pretty sure like I made a conscious effort. Like, don't say the name.
So Stafford is interesting though, because he's sort of like, he's from Texas, but he went to Georgia. He's sort of a Southern fratty bro. I can see him getting some giggles about Jim Bob Cooter.
Oh, yeah, I don't think he's above the fray by any means when it comes to the same degree of humor that the three of us would partake in. But I do believe that he might be the most underappreciated quarterback in the league. Like in Detroit, I worked in Detroit a long time ago. I know that market pretty well. I still have a lot of friends there who are season ticket holders. You know, I know a lot of people in the local media there still. He's a guy who I think the perception nationally is very different than locally. Locally, they can't get beyond the fact that he hasn't won a playoff game yet, that he's made all this money, you know, but the team hasn't won a Super Bowl. And it's like, well, when they have an offense, they never have a defense. And when they have a defense, they didn't have anybody other than Matt Stafford on offense and maybe Calvin Johnson, you know, but no offensive line and no tight ends and not much infrastructure. He hasn't really ever played with anything close to the type of full deck it generally takes to have January success, team-oriented playoff success. But just why? I mean, you've seen one practice, you've almost seen them all when it comes to, like, especially early season training camp stuff. It's pretty monotonous. But, like, Stafford working, you know, 7-on-7, 11-on-11s around the goal line, throwing crazy fades from one set of hash marks to the opposite, you know, back end of the end zone to Golden Tate, like that stuff tends to stand out on you, like just with you and resonate. And his arm action, his fearlessness, and his ball placement, he's a hell of a quarterback.
So you said underappreciated. I agree. Also mentioned the money that he makes. And this guy's going to be like Warren Buffett when it's all said and done with all the money that Matthew Stafford's accumulated. You think they're going to get his contract extension done before week one?
Yes, they have to. Bob Quinn understands the magnitude of this. I mean, this is an organization that in recent years has watched Chad Johnson, right? Has watched Calvin Johnson
yes.
Shut it down.
Diametric opposites.
Chad Johnson, because I think he was at their practice one day after I was. Calvin Johnson shut it down, right? You've seen Ndamukong Suh leave for greener pastures. That defensive line that once was loaded, Cliff Averill, Nick Fairley, all right, they've all gone. Like, there's no way the quarterback can go too. Like, we're not, you know what I mean? We're not completely starting over here. And look, Sam Bradford and Matt Stafford were the last of the true bonus babies. They, before they ever signed, you know, even put their name to that contract, they already were guaranteed $50 million and $60 million respectively, just by the way the old CBA worked. And so when you start negotiating off of those terms, and you're a productive quarterback, and certainly Stafford's been far more productive than Bradford, then you're going to continue to get paid. And as other quarterbacks who aren't as good as you start making the similar kind of money as you, you're going to continue to get paid. So, Yeah, they'll get that done. They have to get that done, and I expect them to get that done before the season starts.
How nervous do you think Lions fans should be about that offensive line situation with Taylor Decker out? Great, they bring Greg Robinson in. Like, hey, we'll take your draft bust here and plug him in and try and get something going. He's been knocked up a little bit. So I'm a little nervous about that left tackle situation here, this offensive line heading into week one for Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some questions there. But the Lang, I mean, I like the Lang signing a lot. I feel like Cyrus Colangelo, like, he was a bust for a couple years and looked like people questioned his heart and everything else. But a lot of evaluators I trust watched his last four or five games with the Bills last year and were like, this dude was balling. You know, can he be a stopgap tackle on one side or the other, depending on how much they end up having to move people around? I don't know. Ricky Wagner, is he worth $9 million a year to be your right tackle? Probably not. But the Baltimore Ravens still wish they had him. I mean, he was a pretty damn good player. And I think that right side, again, when you've got Lang and Wagner, and again, left tackle is obviously important, but I think their ability to run the ball to the right side and be right-handed will be there. I would imagine it's got to be better than last year. I mean, you would just think. But it is getting thin. I mean, they suffer another injury or two there, and you may be right back to the drawing board, which is sort of part of my trepidation about not being all over the Abdullah train or being one of these guys who are kind of like talking up their run game. Again, is it going to be better than 80 yards a game? I mean, I would think it's got to be better than last year, but is it going to be robust enough to call them a truly balanced offense? I don't know.
I'll tell you who is going to be robust in the ground game. Tennessee Titans, right? They have to be. They're loaded on the offensive line. DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry. The one hang up I got, Jason, when it comes to the Titans is that Mike Mularkey's still the coach.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I will
say this, though. Just the makeup of that team, some of the characters and personalities they have there, they're given, like, Mularkey has adapted. I mean, he had to. I mean, he was stuck in the dark ages. And it is truly amazing to me that he's gotten three bites at the apple. That is astonishing to me. But in an odd way, he seems to be a fit with this team. I mean, that's a pretty loose locker room. He's not sweating them. He's letting them do things to get out of drills. And if this guy makes this shot, we're going to cancel this meeting and do that. Like, he seems to have caught a little bit of the millennial spirit. I don't know that we're going to see them ever have an offense that is going to be truly innovative. And it's you know, they're going to be challenging Josh McDaniels for offensive ingenuity any given week. But I also don't know that he has to do that, because as much as it's a young sort of new school roster, the pieces and the complementary pieces on offense it's a throwback. You've got a bunch of maulers up front and two backs who can gash you, and they can get uber physical with you, and that all plays well for Mariota. I liked them when I got there, and then after having seen the Colts up close just a couple days ago and have just, you know, watched enough clips of Bortles over the years and know what a quick hook Bill O'Brien has and how easy it'll be for him to make a meal of their quarterback situation, I think Tennessee wins the division, and I don't know that it's all that close. You know, yeah. I think Tennessee could win 10 games, and I don't think anybody else in that division is better than 500.
Yeah, I've got them winning 11 games, I think, when we did our not to spoil it, but when we did our predictions for the season. And the only thing,
you guys really think that it's like an obvious that the Titans are going to be better than the Houston Texans this year?
Yeah, I think
I do.
Yeah, I think they're going to be consistent on offense. Like Mularkey, if Mularkey was in charge of this high octane crazy passing game, I'd be concerned. You're just asking people to run the ball, right? I mean, and just be brutes up front. And I think they can. I think, first of all, I think they should thump the Colts twice, even as physical as the Colts have gotten. They should own the Colts. You know, I think the Jaguars are going to struggle with Bortles.
Yep.
And I like Texans defense, but I mean, I don't know if I'm buying that Deshaun Watson is going to come in as a rookie and dominate.
I mean, just start with this premise. I know Mariota's not 100%, and he's still coming back from the knee, but he's doing pretty much everything. I mean, he's running. It's not like he's just throwing on the side. He's taking part in these practices. He's running with the ones. The Colts don't know when Andrew Luck is going to even suit up for a practice, much less play in a regular season game. The Jags still have Blake Bortles, and the Texans, whoever wins that quarterback thing, and I think Watson will play pretty soon. Well, look, he could give the job to Savage and pull him in the third quarter of the first game of the year. Ask Brian Hoyer about that. I think just starting with that starting point and the fact that most of these rosters are fairly similar in that division anyway, and I would certainly say Tennessee and Jacksonville, I think, top to bottom, might have the best talent. I defer to the Titans. I love what Dick LeBeau did to that defense last year. I think that John Robinson has found a few pieces on the back end to at least stabilize the secondary. And I believe they're going to be a ball control team, a throwback offense that supports the defense by putting together 10 and 12 play drives.
What's the level of concern, Jay, with Corey Davis and his hamstring?
He was going for an MRI last night. I have not received an update yet. Nobody was freaking out. I mean, I spent a fair amount of time with John Robinson long after practice, and it's not like they were on pins and needles or he was texting the trainers every 5 minutes to get an update. And, you know, this is what – like, I know he didn't have a long holdout or anything, but you tend to get soft tissue and muscle injuries when you're not building yourself up maybe the same way everybody else is, especially for rookie wide receivers. And if Eric Decker goes down, people will start freaking there. But they like some of their other pieces there. They obviously still have a tight end, you know, who gobbles up a fair amount of balls and keeps chains moving. They really like Decker's presence. They like a couple of the other kids that they've drafted. I don't think Corey Dave, like, just go back to the makeup of that offense. I know people are kind of real high on him and you're seeing fantasy buzz about him. I would slow my roll on that a little bit. He's going to have to fight for a place in that offense right away. He's going to have to show that he's durable. And this is a guy who, when you draft hurt, stay hurt. Like, this was a guy who wasn't healthy when he was drafted. So I would be careful in the projections there, but I think Marcus Mariota's touchdown to interception ratio is going to be real high. I think Eric Decker, if he's even moderately healthy, I think they could have two guys in Walker and Decker who might both have double-digit touchdown receptions, and they're going to run the heck out of football.
Wednesday on the Pick 6 podcast, Nick Kostos convinces me to draft Corey Davis over Dennis Smith in this League of Leagues thing. I remember.
By the way, I told you to draft Dennis Smith. Like, I actually made the case for Dennis Smith, and then you were like, I have all these point guards already, and I said, okay, then take Corey Davis. Okay.
Friday, JLC spits truth, and now I'm like crying in here. What about the defense on the Titans? Because to me, Jason, that's sort of where, like, I think the offense is going to be consistent. I think Mariota, if he's healthy, we'll just make smart decisions and distribute the ball well, and they'll be physical. But defensively, you know, they paid Jarrell Casey. I think that's a smart move. Underrated guy. The cornerbacks are interesting because they went big on him this offseason. But Logan Ryan, maybe not a real number one, and Adoree Jackson. As a rookie, is he going to pick up Dick LeBeau's scheme? How do you see those guys fitting in?
They're high on the rookie class in general, and they feel like, again, it's early. We're only 1 week in, but they're not, they're not putting question marks next to a lot of their names just yet. I think it'll be something of a bend don't break defense. I think you'll get your yards on them between the 20s, and then, you know, we'll see if they can hanker down in the red zone and force you to for three instead of seven. I don't think it's going to be a great defense, but Dick LeBeau, I just. They made so many strides last year. I mean, they were shades of the Browns defense and the Saints defense for quite some time with a revolving door of coordinators. And I think the veterans there certainly understand LeBeau's principles now and what he's asking them to do. I think he puts guys in positions to succeed. And again, what offense are they facing in their division that you're like, oh my God? I mean, I just don't see it. You know what I mean? Like, Houston, I'm not buying that all of a sudden that offense is just going to take off. I mean, Osweiler is god-awful, but he ain't the only thing that's a little off there. You know, their left tackle's still holding out, and even when he comes back, he's always hurt. I mean, Fuller's out now. I mean, we'll see. Jacksonville, please. I'll believe it when I see it. And the Colts, I believe, personally, just gut instinct. I believe Luck ends up on PUP to start the year, and I don't even know how much he plays in September. Like, you just got to see. I mean, you know, he's really not doing anything yet, and it's August, and it's his shoulder. So, if they were in a division with, you know, Drew Brees and Cam Newton and Matt Ryan, I'd say they still might not be where they need to be. Like, they still may be too one-sided, and you can't run your way out of everything. But in the AFC South, you probably can run your way to a title, given the makeup of the other three teams.
And, you know, with the Colts, it's fascinating, right? Because I think you're right, right? The tea leaves seem to be pointing to Luck starting the season on PUP, or at the very least missing maybe the first couple weeks or first month of the season. And it seems like the Colts, Chris Ballard, Chuck Pagano and company, content to go into the season with Scott Tolzien potentially as the starter. So, Jay, how did Tolzien look while you were there? And do you think the Colts have plans to bring in maybe a Colin Kaepernick or another veteran potentially in the to protect against Luck being out for an extended period?
No, I don't get the sense that they're going to do that. Tolzien's been around there for a while. They think he's functional. They think he can distribute the ball, and I don't see them doing much now. I really don't. How good is Scott? I mean, Scott, how, I mean, I don't know. How do you look at practice? He's going against the Colts defense. You know, I don't want to make too much of that. I mean, there's, again, they have to be better by default, like some of these other instances we've talked about. But I'm by no means buying them just yet. You know, I don't know, guys. They're not going to win football games without Andrew Luck. I mean, let's, and I don't even know how many they're going to win with Andrew Luck as presently constituted. And when you talk to other GMs, you talk to people, experienced guys in this league, I mean, they'll whisper, look, if I'm Chris Ballard, why the hell am I worried about this guy playing games this September? Right? You're still a couple years away. You want to get the highest draft pick you can get. You want to you've got him signed long term. He is in every way, shape, and form the franchise. We're not talking about, you know, a meniscus or an ankle. We're talking about his moneymaker. You know, the most important set of joints in his body. And once he plays, you know that he can't really turn it off, and he does go, you know, he's susceptible to injury because of the way he runs with the football and takes on tacklers, and will he evolve from that somewhat? Yeah, I guess, but why not protect him from himself as long as humanly possible? Now, Chuck Pagano's on a very different career path, you know what I mean? He's escaped the Grim Reaper twice, and he's very much in you better show something now.
Jay, he's out after this year, right? He's out after this year, Pagano.
I have to think so, because I don't think they're going to have much of a season. And I think, you know, you start looking at Dave Tobe, the Chiefs special teams coach who was with Ballard in Chicago and was with Ballard in Kansas City. I mean, certainly a young GM likes to have a coach who ideally he didn't inherit. But, you know, you got Pagano in win yesterday mode, and you got Ballard, five-year deal, you know, trying to establish himself, doesn't want to be one of these guys one and out. Like, he's got buddies with the Jets. Like, he can call some of his buddies with the Jets. And, in fact, he hired one, Rex Hogan, on his staff. How great did winning 10 games your first year work out for you? You know what I mean? Then everybody thinks you're better than you are, and then the schedule gets tougher, and, you know, you have a few injuries, and next thing you know, they want to fire you after year two. So I would not be in a hurry. If they tell me he could play week one, I'm sitting him a week or two anyway. And when Andrew Luck, talk about reading tea leaves. When they're going out of their way not to make him available to the public, and when he does talk, he sounds more skeptical and pessimistic than the team. I mean, this is a guy who every day is the greatest day in the history of the world. Every day is another day to go out there and be great and enjoy life and get smarter and read books and learn more about, like, he's never had a bad day. And for him to be the guy, like, yeah, you can't talk to him, and we don't know when he's going to talk, and the next time he talks is when he makes his next step in his recovery, and we don't know what that is or what that's going to be, and when he'll be able to throw full speed and throw multiple days in a row, and when he'll be able to practice. Like, really? He's going to play September 10th or whatever, or 12th, just because. All right.
So if Andrew Luck can't play and it's Scott Tolzien, I think it kind of means you got to lean on the running game, which is sort of a problem because your offensive line may or may not be improved, but may or may not be great. These running backs are still going to matter for fantasy purposes, and I know you talked about Corey Davis. I'm just curious about the insight and how that works, because basically I'm in a position where I might have Frank Gore on this roster, may need to look at Marlon Mack.
Oh, man, I like Marlon Mack quite a bit.
How do you think it shakes out there, Jason, in terms of, you know, I mean, obviously it's really early here. Marlon Mack fourth on the depth chart right now, Gore the starter. How do you think the carries shake out and the sort of the touches work at that running back position?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it could be a tale of two seasons for them, and I don't know when Luck comes back, you know, and then how much do they change it. I like Dante Moncrief in that offense. I think he's a sleeper. He's in a contract year. He quietly puts up pretty good touchdown numbers, and you just watch him in the red zone. He kind of gets it done, and I think there'll be more volume for him now that they've had a changing of the guards completely at tight end and some guys who maybe weren't the greatest football players, but guys Andrew Luck really, really liked, and especially in Fleener, you know, had been with him for a long time. I think that the balls will be distributed around there pretty good, and I like Moncrief. The run game, I do think the offensive line is better than it's given credit for. You know, I think the two greatest gifts that Grigson leaves for Ballard are the quarterback, and honestly, relative to the rest of the roster, I think the offensive line is actually kind of okay. And some of those guys will continue to develop. I you know, Frank Gore, history will tell you that when running backs hit the wall, they hit it violently and completely, and it's a thud, you know, and you go from being, you know, Clinton Portis carrying it 323 times to Clinton Portis can't get a workout. You know, nobody wants to call him. He's done, you know, Sean Alexander. Gore has been the ultimate freak of nature, and on a certain level, I guess you never bet against him, but Father Time is undefeated.
Jay, know you're back home in Baltimore for a couple days. Get to watch your beloved Orioles in the comfort of your own home. Where are you going to be at in the coming days and next week?
Yeah, I head out the beginning of the week. I will be flying to the West Coast. I'll set up shop in Costa Mesa for 4 or 5 days. And you've got, I think, I'm getting confused who's where. The Rams, I think, are in Irvine, which is a hop, skip, and a jump from Costa Mesa. The Chargers are in Costa Mesa. I'll check up with those guys, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't know. The 9th, whenever that is. There'll be a joint practice with the Rams and the Chargers. I'll be there. I'll shoot over to Oxnard where the Cowboys are and check out that spectacle for a day. I'll come back and probably spend another day with the Rams. Then I'm up to San Francisco. I'll check out the 49ers. I'll check out the Seahawks. And then I will I'll head back east. So I'm out west, I think, for 8 days or something like that, 8 or 9 days.
Sounds like fun. Appreciate it, Jay. Enjoy the weekend. Try not to get hit by a car, buddy, because you need to make it to age 80.
Yeah, okay? We just jinxed it, man. You guys just put the Maloik on me. Thank you.
And what does Prisco call that? The Italian curse, whatever the hell it is, in any event. Jason, thanks, buddy. Enjoy the weekend.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Talk to you soon.
Great. That was the great Jason La Canfora. And I like Will negotiating against himself. Goes from 80 to 70. If we had let him keep going, it's like, yeah, let me get to 45 and then I'm out the door. Just give me 2 more years and I'm good here.
Sorry. Say, listen, if you just get me out to California, I'll sign for it. You can bury me in Cali. All right. Great review. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more Pick Six Podcasts.